I would like to express my heartfelt appreciation and also pay tribute to the great work done by those Japanese Americans who made tremendous contribution to Hawaii, as well as tremendous contribution as the Kakehashi Bridge between Japan and the United States.
It started with President Obama saying he could have taken on Trump.
I am confident in this vision because I'm confident that if I had run again and articulated it, I think I could have mobilized a majority of the American people to rally behind it.
Trump firing back, tweeting, "President Obama said he thinks he would have won against me. He should say that, but I say no way."
If you are in the return line, beware. Lots of stores have new rules. You have just 2 weeks to return drones to places like Target and Walmart. Kohl's, a January 31st deadline for top shelf electronics. And in some stores, you need to bring your receipt and your ID.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, it's 5:10, and today is Tuesday, December 27th. It's Dave Player in for Steve Grzanich here on The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. On the bell this morning, national-known real estate expert J.P. Piccinini, who runs one of the fastest-growing brokerages in the country, will talk about the real estate market and trends that we're going to look at for the new year. Then after the news at 5:30, Jim Dahlke, associate editor of Chicago Inno, will break down the 17 Chicago startups to watch in 2017. A lot of exciting businesses being started here in Chicago. All that is coming up after we check the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. We'll be watching the S&P today and throughout the week to see if we can hit that 20,000 mark by year end. Asian markets finished mixed as of the most recent closing prices. The Nikkei gained nearly half a point, while the Hang Seng led the Shanghai Composite lower. They fell a quarter of a point. We have some business news happening around the world yesterday and overnight. The dollar dipped against the yen on Monday, edging lower down after U.S. Treasury yields dipped on mixed economic data. The greenback was down 0.2%, and the euro remained steady. Congressional Republicans are planning a massive tax overhaul, a heavy political lift that could ultimately affect families at every income level and businesses of every size. Their goal is to simplify a complicated tax code that rewards wealthy people with smart accountants and corporations that can easily shift profits and jobs overseas. Last time it was done was 30 years ago. House Republicans have released the outline of a tax plan that would lower the top individual income tax rate from 39.6% to 33% and reduce the number of tax brackets from 7 to 3. The gist of the plan is to lower tax rates for just about everyone and make up the lost revenue by scaling back exemptions, deductions, and credits. Small business owners would get a special top tax rate of 25%. Investment income would be taxed like wages, but investors would only have to pay taxes on half this income. The top corporate tax rate in the U.S. for corporations is 35%, the highest in the industrialized world. However, the tax is riddled with so many exemptions, deductions, and credits, the most corporations pay much less. Both President-elect Trump and House Republicans want to lower the rate and pay for it by scaling back tax breaks. And the Metra is eyeing VW settlement funds for clean locomotives. Illinois will collect nearly $98 million for anti-pollution projects from a federal legal settlement from Volkswagen, the German automaker that installed secret software in nearly 500,000 diesel vehicles to make them appear cleaner than they actually were. The agreement stipulates the money must be used to reduce lung and heart-damaging nitrogen oxides emitted by diesel trains, buses, ferries, and equipment. So far, there's been no public discussion on how Governor Bruce Rauner's administration should spend the VW windfall. Through a top aide, said Metra, the Chicago Transit Authority and other potential recipients already are clamoring behind the scenes to secure their share. All right, home buying activity increased in November to the strongest sales pace in nearly a decade through rising prices and mortgage rates could pressure the U.S. housing sector in the new year. Did you know that the holiday season, though, is one of the best times to purchase a new home? Well, to break it all down is nationally known real estate expert J.P. Piccinini, who runs one of the fastest growing brokerages in the country. Good morning, J.P.
Good morning, Chicago. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, November new home sales leaped despite limited home inventory. Why is this a good time of year to buy, J.P.?
Well, we have some serious sellers. When a house is on the market this time of year, you know that the seller is motivated. They're obviously wanting to get out of the house before the holidays, or are willing to move during the holidays. And for the same reason, the buyers are looking to buy are very serious. There aren't typically that many buyers, even though this fourth quarter we've had some of the historically highest sales that we've ever had, actually since 2007, right before the market crash. So typically there's a demand for serious buyers, and rates typically tend to be the lowest out of the year. So you tend to get a good deal. You tend to get a motivated seller and a serious buyer. So it's kind of a match made in heaven.
Home prices continue to rise as inventory stayed tight, crimping affordability for many would-be buyers as mortgage rates march higher. Those forces could depress sales as the spring buying season approaches.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I think we're going to continue to see what we saw in this fourth quarter with rates going up. The people that are on the fence, the buyers are on the fence, are going to actually decide to pull the trigger. So we're going to see a very strong real estate market for the next couple of years. Rates are going to increase. This administration has made it clear we're in it to make money. They've already pretty much forecasted 4 more increases for next year, according to the feds. So that is going to drive up mortgage rates up a little higher. And people that are looking to buy are really going to figure out that this is the time. Otherwise, with rising prices and rising rates, they're going to be pushed out of the market.
Sooner rather than later, they have to make those decisions. Yeah, first-time home buyers represented 32% of November sales. Is that typical or is that higher than usual?
Actually, that's the issue that we're having right now. It's a little lower. Usually, we'd like to see that around the 40%. Unfortunately, the main issue that we're seeing in the market across the United States is house affordability for first-time home buyers. Builders are not building enough homes in the first-time home buyer price range. And unfortunately, with rising prices, 7% more than it was last year, these guys are getting pushed out. It's really difficult for a first-time home buyer to purchase homes. And there's a couple of factors for that. Wages obviously haven't increased as much as home prices have. So when you look at the debt-to-income ratio for a first-time home buyer, that becomes a bit limiting when what somebody can buy. Millennials are still on the fence. They're a bit nomadic. They're not really sure what they want to do yet. They haven't matured, so they drive the majority of the first-time home buyer market. So there's some factors there, but it's a little lower. It's typically lower than what we'd like to see.
We are talking to real estate expert J.P. Piccinini, and there's more after a look at your early morning traffic. It's Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich here on the Opening Bell on the WGN Associated Market Desk this morning. Looking ahead to 2017, the only certainty is there will be uncertainty, and a lot is to do with how markets will react to the man who will take over the White House in January. According to Forbes, here are some of the stocks to watch in the years to come. Apple stock trailed the broader market in 2016, but there might be tailwinds in 2017. Tax reform may include a provision that incentivizes companies to deploy its billions in foreign cash back to shareholders, while some analysts are betting big on big upgrade cycles for the iPhone 8, which has been lacking in recent launches. Uber, the on-demand taxi startup, has grand designs on being a one-stop shop for anything that moves. Will it finally go public in 2017? Well, we'll be following that stock in the new year. Hedge fund investors have been gambling that the government-backed mortgage zombies Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will be reprivatized for years, something we'll be watching over the next 12 months. And as for Wells Fargo, the fakes account scandal that has held back the San Francisco-based bank's participation in the big financial rally to close 2016. Here's hoping that CEO Tim Sloan gets things back on track and shores up its one sterling reputation in 2017. It's now 5:22. It's time for Your Money.
Hey, it's Your Money. Did you get a gift card this holiday season? Consumer Reports' Todd Marks has this advice. It may expire, and probably sooner than you think.
Run. Don't walk. Get in the car, go to the mall, and use them immediately.
Well, that may be a bit of an exaggeration, but you get the point. Check to see if you need to register the card, and don't wait to do that either. Finally, if you don't think you're going to use the gift card, check out sites like Gift Card Granny to see if you can exchange or sell it. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Dave Plyer for Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN. We're talking to nationally known real estate expert J.P. Piccinini. So, J.P., Illinois home sales, including single-family homes and condos in November, totaled 11,000 homes, up 15% in November from last year. The statewide median price in November was up 8%. City of Chicago saw a 13.2% year-over-year home sales increase. And the median home sale price is up 11%. We seem to be ahead of the curve here in Illinois.
Yeah, you've got the large urban markets. As we were talking earlier about the millennials, what's happening with a lot of the urban areas, we're seeing a revitalization of the entire urban scene in the United States. So the millennials and a lot of the baby boomers and retired folks are choosing for the more urban living. So it's pushing people out of suburbia necessarily and more into the larger metro areas. Of course, the job market being as good as it is and increasing and being one of the highlights of the U.S. recovery, what's happening is people are working more, and they're working more downtown, of course, in more urban areas.
There was a slow start to luxury home sales this year, the McMansions, but now even the biggest of the biggest are starting to sell again.
Yeah, what's happening is that market is actually softened up quite a bit. The issue that we have is inventory is in the lower price ranges that we're seeing, but in the higher price ranges, there is an abundance of inventory. So the people are actually getting some good deals. Buyers are snatching up some good properties in that price range for a good value. So those are moving where they can. However, up in the West, there's been almost no impact for the first time in 5 years in terms of home prices. So there's a little red flag going up in the West Coast. The West Coast, the prices being a lot higher than everywhere else in the United States, except maybe some of the larger Northeast markets. But those prices actually did not move this quarter, which is concerning because we've had price increases in every price range for the last 5 years.
There's been many changes when people are searching for a home, different expectations over the years. Older homes don't have today's amenities that people are looking for. They have rooms that nobody uses anymore, that front room, that living room that, you know, was covered with plastic furniture over the years. What are some of the amenities people are willing to pay for, often regardless of their budget?
You know, we're seeing some interesting trends. People are actually looking for smaller homes. You mentioned McMansions earlier because we're so nomadic. We're so really kind of a lock and leave lifestyle these days. So you're seeing really a trend for smaller homes being built. Builders don't prefer to build larger homes. So I would say the trend is actually to downsize the square footage to make it more compact. One of the things that we're seeing that home builders aren't building anymore is the home office. So when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because these days with the cloud and people working remotely and whatnot, they're not necessarily needing a home office. They're not necessarily having an office full of paperwork as we used to. So that's gone away. But of course, the entertaining area still increased. We don't have the formal den anymore, but we have the large living kitchen eating area that's right. Huge now. That's the main focus of the house, and that's where people tend to really focus their money in designs.
What are some of the real estate trends you're looking out for the new year?
Inventory, that's still concerning. That's a big issue. As we mentioned earlier, if there's no inventory, builders, for some reason, are still very, very sluggish in getting things started, mainly due to the demand of lots surpassing the actual starts. So there aren't any lots for them to build on just yet. And then, of course, house affordability. With prices continuing to increase because as a result of not having inventory, it's kind of a double-edged sword there. We're going to have a couple more years of very strong sales. However, we need to keep an eye on home prices because that could make things unaffordable in a lot of real estate markets.
Nationally known real estate expert J.P. Piccinini. Where can we find you, J.P.?
I go to the web at jpar.net, jpar.net. That's our company corporate website, JP and Associates Realtors.
All right. Thanks so much, JP, and Happy New Year to you.
Hey, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. JP, let's see here. David Jennings, are you up there?
Yes.
Oh, good morning, David. What's
good
going
morning.
On? What are some of the top stories we'll be looking at today?
Mall mania and not the good kind, and some reasons behind the shooting spree that just has never stopped in 2016 in Chicago.
All right, David, thanks so much. You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. It's 527.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich this morning. Now in its third year, it's safe to say none of Chicago Inno's previous startups to watch lists have included three founders who have all led companies to $1 billion plus exits. Chicago's tech scene is doing some growing up, highlighted in part by successful entrepreneurs who are now on to their next gigs and have committed to stay here in Chicago. And to break down 17 Chicago startups to watch in 2017 is Jim Dahlke. He's the associate editor of Chicago Inno. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Dave. How you doing?
I am great. Hey, thanks for getting up with us early this morning. It's a exciting time in Chicago when we have this many startups that are on the hot list. What was the criteria that brought these companies to the forefront?
Exactly. The criteria really is kind of purposely vague for us. Really, what we wanted to do was sort of highlight really interesting Chicago startups kind of in the early stage, sort of seed to Series A. Companies that really kind of popped last year and this year in 2016 and who got a little nice traction this year and who we think are sort of poised to really take off in 2017. So some of these startups are in stealth. Some of them have gained a little bit of traction, raised some money here in 2016, and who we think are really poised to make some big moves next year.
Let's start about with number one here, which has our Groupon founder involved in it. Let's talk about Tempus.
Yeah, Tempus is probably one of the most interesting startups to watch in 2017, and for exactly that reason. It is founded by Eric Lakofsky, who, as you said, started Groupon back in the day. Tempus, though, is a far cry from the Daily Deal site that Groupon is. Tempus is building an operating system for cancer. So basically what they're doing is using genomic sequencing and machine learning to help doctors better understand a patient's tumor. Think of it as sort of collecting huge amounts of data on genomic sequencing. What they're doing is helping give doctors more personalized treatment options for their patients. So basically, every cancer patient is different. Everyone needs a different form of treatment. Tempus is taking a big data approach to sort of giving doctors the information they need to offer more specific treatment care for their patients.
And they're partnering with some big hospitals too.
Exactly. Yeah. Lurie Cancer Center and Rush University Medical here in Chicago. So really sort of wanting to give big hospitals a lot of data to help sort of target cancer and help their patients. And it's a big swing from probably arguably Chicago's most well-known entrepreneur. Tempus is based here in Chicago in the Groupon building. So it's just a yet another sort of swing from the Groupon founders here in Chicago.
Other one is Oshint with Chris Gladwin, who I was on a board, the Broadcast Museum board with. He owned Cleversafe, sold it to IBM for $1.3 billion. Let's talk about what he's doing with Oshint.
Yeah, Oshint is a really interesting company, partly because we really don't know anything about it. Basically, Chris Gladwin sold his company in 2015 for $1.3 billion. He put out a statement last year that said, hey, I'm on to my next thing. I'm not quite telling you what I'm doing yet, but it's going to be big, and I'm hiring lots of people. So the reason Ozian is interesting to us is because, like Lakofsky, Gladwin is one of the most successful entrepreneurs in Chicago. So we are definitely going to watch what Ozian is doing because they are going to hire a bunch of people. And the last company that Chris Gladwin had and sold, Cleversafe, created 80 new millionaires in Chicago based on the equity system that they set up there. So he is going to be doubling down again in Chicago with another new company here. We're not exactly sure what Ocean does. They are in stealth mode right now, but he says he plans to hire hundreds of local people. So it's going to be another big company here in Chicago. Definitely want to keep an eye on.
I didn't think Chris was going to retire. So,
he does not seem like the type to retire. He is definitely eager to start the next thing.
Catalytic is very similar. Not quite sure what this is going to be all about yet either, but Sean Chow is behind this one.
Yeah, so he's the former CTO at Fieldglass, which sold to SAP for more than $1 billion in 2014. So he's our third founder on the list who has had a $1 billion exit and is sort of doubling down on Chicago again. Catalytic also operating in stealth mode. We know a little bit more about what they're doing. They're doing chatbots for businesses. So lots of companies are using chatbots. Facebook is using chatbots right now to sort of connect folks with businesses, and what they are doing is sort of building a platform for businesses to help automate some processes. So they're got a few details out on them, but they're also operating as stealth. Interesting thing about them, they raised $1 million back in September in a round led by NEA and a handful of notable Chicago investors. So they investors certainly are bullish on them, even if we don't know all the details of what they're doing. But again, this is another startup founded by a successful Chicago entrepreneur who is hiring, raising money here in Chicago. So it's really interesting to kind of see this maturation process happen in the city of Chicago, where you're seeing its serial founders double down and build their next companies here as well.
One of the most interesting ones on this list is Remote Year. Tell us a little bit about this company. It's very interesting.
Yes, Remote Year is a company that helps employees travel the world while also continuing to work at their jobs remotely. It sort of launched 2 years ago, and when I first heard about it, I kind of thought of it as just sort of a quirky little idea. I didn't think of it really as a business, but you know, this startup raised $12 million last year from the co-founder of Airbnb and WeWork Labs and among other investors. So this is a real business, and they are generating real revenue. So basically, people pay $5,000 deposit and $2,000 per month to take part in the program. And what you do is you spend 1 month in a different city around the world for 12 months, all while working remotely. So they help you work in different spaces. They work with your employer to kind of coordinate everything. And you still work at your regular job. You're just sort of traveling and getting all these experiences. So really, they're helping you travel and stay sort of connected to your job in a way that you would be very difficult to sort of do on your own. They kind of handle a lot of those logistics.
I like Party Slate, kind of pairing up event professionals, caterers, and so forth with those who need to plan a party.
Exactly. And they're kind of taking a Pinterest approach to it. So it's a very photo-driven website. Really, if you're looking for a caterer, a florist, a different venue, this is sort of a website that gives you all the kind of images and information you need to kind of find the right things to sort of plan that perfect party. They were a member of the Techstars Chicago cohort, which is a very exclusive tech accelerator here in Chicago. So they did that last year. They raised about $1 million in funding. And I mean, the event industry is massive, obviously. I mean, and they are making this sort of process way more efficient to people to throw the kind of perfect party and to get all the information on different stuff they need from caterers to venues. So, yeah, that Party Slate is a very interesting company.
Virtual key. So here, you know, Airbnb becoming more and more popular and really trying to figure out how to get people in and out of the house. They figured out a way to do this digitally.
Exactly. Yeah. And they really rely on smart locks. So homes that have a smart lock on them, what they do is they provide a digital key to help Airbnb guests, house cleaners sort of enter the house when they need. So basically what they do is they send a digital key, which is a time-sensitive key, to send it to your phone to let you enter the building during a certain window of time. So if you are an Airbnb guest, the owner can use virtual key to send you a code, which will let you in during the duration of your stay, not any time before or any time after. So your digital key expires when your stay at the Airbnb expires. And then the key will also then go to – a new key will go to the house cleaner who needs to go to the Airbnb, change the sheets, clean the bathrooms. That key expires when the cleaning appointment is done. And so really it's a very efficient way. No longer you need to hide a key under the mat or sort of do all this coordinating on your end to get people into the Airbnb. It just uses smart locks to get people in and out safely. So really interesting company, a finalist at the University of Chicago's New Venture Challenge back in 2015, doing some interesting things.
And easily trackable, too, so you can see who's coming in and out of your house on a daily basis as well.
Exactly.
Eat Pact. So, you know, we talk about healthier lunches for kids. We put it so much on the school system, but it's really a parent's responsibility to make sure their kids are eating right. And Eat Pact has done just that.
Exactly. And like Party Slate, they were in the Techstars class earlier this year. And yeah, they are a monthly school lunch delivery startup. So they are sending meals to a parent's home, and then the parents can put that in their parent in the kids' lunchbox every day. No longer does a parent need to sort of have to wake up every day and pack a lunch every single day. This is a healthy, good food for their kid every day. They start at $26 a week for four meals, goes up to $72 a week for 12 meals. And so, you know, it's definitely at a heftier price point, I think, than it would be if you were to make your lunch every day, but it really sort of cuts out the time element of, you know, busy professionals who don't exactly have the time to sort of put together a healthy meal every day. And I think that is another part of the of Eat Pact, which is interesting too, is that they pick the healthy items for the parents. It's tough to know when you're scouring the shelves what is the right ingredient, what's the best meal for the child. So Eat Pact sort of takes that sort of pain point away from the parents.
I want to hit a couple more before I let you go. Arity, here's a company that's part spun out of Allstate, looking at big data to determine how likely a person is to get into a car accident. That could revolutionize that whole industry.
It's going to be really interesting to see what Arity does. So, yeah, they were a startup that sort of was operating a little bit in stealth mode as well and kind of popped up last year. And, yes, they are spun out of Allstate. They are working in the merchandise mart, and they work by collecting billions of miles of sensor data from smartphones and inside vehicles to help companies evaluate the risk of a driver. What they're trying to do is provide software to insurance companies and others in the automobile space to help give insight into a person's driving behavior. So you could think that their algorithm will help insurers better price a coverage plan for individual customers, for example. So they've got like 200 people working at Arity. They're, you know, sort of backed by Allstate, but they're going to be selling to, you know, other insurers and other people in the auto space. So they're not just giving the information back to Allstate. So it's going to be really interesting to kind of see how we sort of use this big data approach to price folks who are likely to get into a car accident. So they're doing some really, really interesting predictive stuff at Arity.
We have a very underrated gaming community, and Gunslinger is going to put us kind of back on the map. Let's talk about Gunslinger.
Yeah, Gunslinger is a startup video game studio by Tim Harris, who is a sort of an interesting story, a guy who was in Chicago, left for the West Coast, and who is now back. And actually, we're seeing that a little bit of that happen more often here in Chicago, where it's kind of a boomerang effect where startups or founders are here in Chicago, leave, and now are actually coming back. So, again, about the maturation process of Chicago, that kind of continues that. Gunslinger is what they're doing is creating mobile games that you can play on your phone, on the go, in under 60 seconds. So they're kind of really revolutionizing mobile gaming, thinking, hey, I want to play a quick game on my phone. I want to do it on the L on my train ride from between my two stops. This isn't Candy Crush. This is a bit more competitive. Think about multiplayer shooter games. So what they're trying to do is bring a more sophisticated gaming to folks who are just kind of play on their phone on the go. And I think they can sort of bring a live element to this too. Esports is really taking off in live event formats. They think they can do something sort of similar in like a March Madness-style bracket competition where folks are playing 60-second games, 64 teams, bringing them all together. So they've got a really interesting business model. They just raised $1.4 million just the other month from Chicago Ventures and some other folks in the area. Their first game is called Exiles of Embermark, due out next year.
Very cool. And I'm sure there's more startups that will bubble up throughout the year that we'll be watching as well. Jim Dahlke, he's the associate editor of Chicago Inno. Thanks, Jim. Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Thanks so much.
All right.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich this morning from the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. We'll be watching the S&P today and all throughout the week to see if we can hit that 20,000 mark by year end. Asian markets finished mixed as most of the recent closing prices. The Nikkei gained nearly half, while the Hang Seng led the Shanghai Composite lower. Oil prices were a little changed on Tuesday in light pre-New Year holiday trading, with markets adopting a wait-and-see stance less than a week before the first output cut deal between OPEC and non-OPEC members in 15 years. January 1st brings the official start of the deal agreed by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and non-OPEC members to lower production by almost 1.8 million barrels per day. And now for the latest on commodities and agriculture, here is Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. Catching a little bit of a cold here in the desert where it's 45 degrees in the Valley of the Sun. And as we take a look at the overnight trade and grain trade, soybean futures are trading higher after suffering deep losses last week. But we are getting the concerns over poor rainfall affecting the key crop areas of Argentina. Wheat is up about 1% on expectations of strong demand from India, where 2 years of lower output has depleted stockpiles. So this morning we're looking at soybeans up about 11 cents in the trade. And a reminder that, again, trading volume will probably be down this four-day trading week because a lot of traders are taking the week on vacation. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Get some rest and some hot tea, my friend.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Orion. Now the Associated Bank Desk outlook for Tuesday, December 27th, 2016. Here's what we'll be following today. From Economy, the Consumer Confidence Report will be released at 9 o'clock this morning. Tomorrow we'll be looking at the pending home sales report. As for earnings, reports due today include National Holdings Corp, World Health Energy Holdings, Start Scientific, Fuel Cell Energy, and BMC Capital. Wall Street has been hoping to end the year with a bang, with the Dow finishing above 20,000. But in the past week, as stocks have made small gains, the Dow backed away from the big milestone after edging within 13 points. So with the Dow now just about 70 points away, there's some hope that the Dow will get there in the final trading days of 2016. According to Stock Traders Almanac, the traditional Santa Claus rally falls on the period spanning the last trading days of the old year and the first two trading days of the new year. Last year, there was no rally, and the S&P 500 fell 5.1% in January before bottoming in February. And today is National Fruitcake Day. Across the United States, fruitcake lovers, young and old, observe National Fruitcake Day each year on December 27th. Made with chopped candy or dried fruit, nuts, and spices, and sometimes soaked in spirits, fruitcake has been a holiday gift-giving tradition for many years. Rome is believed to be the creator of the fruitcake, and one of the earliest recipes known comes from the ancient Rome listing pomegranate seeds, pine nuts, and raisins that were mixed into barley mash. Records indicate that in the Middle Ages, honey and spices and preserved fruits were also added. Sugar from the American colonies, along with the discovery that high concentrations of sugar could preserve fruits, created an excess of candied fruit, hence making fruitcakes more affordable and more popular. Starting in the 16th century, typically they are rich in fruits, and mail-order fruitcake began in 1913. Brandy-soaked linens have been used to store fruitcakes, as some people believe they will improve with age. Well, we know that the fruitcake doesn't. And to me, that's like gingerbread houses. You know, they're cute and fun to make, but I've never seen anyone eat one. All right, Pete McMurray is in for Steve Cochran. We'll turn things over to him next on 720 WGN.